Open your Bibles this evening to the book of Ruth, and we're going to talk about the story in the book of Ruth for a little bit this evening. One of the great stories in the Old Testament, great lessons to be learned from Naomi and Ruth and Boaz. And I'm taking a great chance this evening, a great, great chance this evening. I'm going to let you help. I know that's a big, big putting my neck out on the line this evening. The cards that I passed out, if you would like to help make application, I'm going to turn the application of the lesson over to you. I'm going to talk about the lesson from Ruth. I'm going to talk about the story of the book of Ruth. And most of you are already familiar with the story, so it's not a new story to you. But I will give you the chance to jot down a few suggestions of application this evening, and near the end of the lesson I'm going to ask Tyler to collect those, and then I will read those, make them brief. Don't write me a commentary on the front and back of the card, so we can just make a few read a few of your suggestions of what you think this story is all about, or some piece of application to the story of Ruth. The story of Ruth, of course, takes place in the Old Testament, and specifically it takes place during the time of the Judges. It is the eighth book of the Old Testament, and it is found immediately following the book of Judges. And it says in verse 1 of chapter 1, "It came to pass in the days when the judges judged that there was a famine in the land." And so we will go through the chapters one by one briefly and read a few of the passages from the chapters. And I'll try not to take too long with my part of this evening. But I just want to review the story. And once again, I know it's a story you're familiar with. But I do believe, especially with the three main characters of the book of Ruth, we see some great lessons and some great stories and some great lessons that we can learn from the book of Ruth. We might be thinking about, is the book of Ruth aptly named? As someone recently suggested, that the book of Ruth is called the book of Ruth, but their opinion was that Naomi was the main character. It should have been called the book of Naomi. And I don't know if I agree with that or not. In fact, I'm not going to give my opinion. But you can think about that as we're studying. What should the book be called? Should the book be called Boaz? Should the book be called Ruth? Should the book be called Naomi? Well, whatever, there are great lessons to be learned. And so the story begins, of course, here in the first chapter with Elimelech. Elimelech was the husband of Naomi. Elimelech and Naomi had two sons. And their names were Mahlon and Chilion. And they sojourned from Judea to Moab. Moab was to the east of Judea. And it says that there was a famine in the land. And because of the famine, they went to Moab. And the Bible says that they arrived in Moab. And not too long after they arrived in Moab, Elimelech passed away. And then this first chapter goes on to tell us that the two boys married Moabite women. And their names were Orpah and Ruth, that the book is named after. And then again, after a period of time, the boys both died. And so now Naomi and Ruth and Orpah are all left widows. And again, the Bible tells us that Naomi determined that she was going to return to the land of Judah. And it says that the reason that she determined that she would return to the land of Judah was because she had heard that the famine was over. And so she would return back to her home. And you certainly can't blame Naomi for wanting to return home. In fact, I suppose any of us, if we were sojourning in a foreign land among foreigners, not our own people, and after a period of time, especially if the reason for the purpose of that sojourning had been removed, as in the case of the famine being over, And the fact that her husband was now dead, and her two sons were now dead, and the fact that she had been away from her family, we certainly can't blame her for wanting to return to her homeland. And so she goes to return to her homeland, and the Bible tells us in this first chapter that the two daughters-in-law were prepared to go with her. And it even seems that she began to make the journey. That's a little unclear to me whether this all happens right at the beginning before she leaves or whether they traveled a little space first. But whatever the case is, the young ladies went to go with her. And notice what she says to them. In verse 8 here of chapter 1, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go return each of you to her mother's house. Jehovah deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Jehovah grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband." And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they wept. And so Naomi encourages them to return to her mother's house, to their mother's house. Return home. Go back home. Don't go with me, but go back home. And then she says in verse 9, "May the Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." What's she talking about? Well, clearly she's talking about a future husband. You return to your mother's house, and may the Lord grant you, may the Lord be with you, may the Lord give you another husband, and may you find rest, may you find peace in the house of your husband. And so she kissed them, and they wept, and they said unto her, "Nay, but we will return with thee unto thy people." And Naomi said, "Turn again, my daughters, why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that you may be, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight, and should also bear sons, would you therefore tarry until they are grown? Would you therefore say, would you stay from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes, and for the hand of Jehovah is gone forth against me." And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And so she makes the first statement, and she goes to leave. And the daughters-in-law again say, "No, we will go with you." And she says again, "No, daughters, turn up, go back." And then she says, "Do I have sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" This undoubtedly is an allusion to what we're going to see more about in the story, and that is the custom among Israel that if a man died and he did not have any seed, he did not have any children, that his brother was to take his wife and raise up seed to the dead brother. So we're going to see more about that. But this, she seems to be making a reference to, "Do I have other sons that I can give you? Your husband has died. I don't have any more sons to give to you that they may help to you to raise up seed. And even if I was married tonight, if I were to marry tonight," which was not going to happen, "but if I were to marry tonight, and if I were to have a husband today, and if I should bear sons, would you wait for them to grow up? Would you wait until the day that they would grow up so that they could perform the obligation?" No, she said, that doesn't make any sense. You go back home. You find husbands. Don't worry about me. I'll be okay, is what she said. And so Orpah seems to finally be pushed out of the nest, and Orpah kisses her mother-in-law, and she returns, but Ruth would refuse to go. And so it says that she clave unto her, verse 15. And so once again, Naomi says to her, "Behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her God. Return thou after thy sister-in-law." And of course, one of the most famous passages in all of the Bible, much less just the book of Ruth. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, and to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go, and whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, thy God my God. Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. Jehovah, do so to me, and more also, if but death part me and thee. And it says, when she saw that she was steadfast minded to go with her, she left off speaking to her. And so Ruth makes the promise to her. Oftentimes this passage is quoted during a wedding ceremony. And we pointed out before, many preachers have pointed out before, this was not said to a man to a woman or a woman to a man in a wedding ceremony, but it's said to the daughter-in-law to her mother. But still it shows her great love that she has, the great devotion that she has. When she says, don't beg me to leave. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. It seems as we read on through the story, we see the great love that Ruth had for Naomi and the devotion that she had for Naomi. But more than that, it seems that we get an inclination as we go through the story that she had already come to accept the God of Israel as her God. And she says, your God is going to be my God. And where you die, there am I going to be buried. I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to be a part of your life. I'm going to give myself to you. And so they made their way back to Bethlehem. Well, we see at the end of the chapter that they come to Bethlehem. And I think this section is important for understanding Naomi. It came to pass when they came to Bethlehem that the women said, is this Naomi? I think it must be clear that she had aged significantly in just a few years. One place earlier in the chapter says something about 10 years. So they were gone at least 10 years. And 10 years can put some age on us. But think also about the fact of what she had been through. She had lost her husband and two sons. That will age you. And so the sorrow and the difficulties and the travel and the time all added up. And they says, is this Naomi? And she said to them again, call me not Naomi, call me Mara. Naomi means pleasant and Mara means bitter. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. And I went out full, and Jehovah hath brought me home again empty. Why call ye me Naomi? Seeing Jehovah hath testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me. And so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned out of the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. And so we see that they return, and they come back at the beginning of the barley harvest. The barley harvest took place in the late spring, I'm told, in Israel. And then I also understand that we're going to see that at the end of chapter 2, that Ruth gleaned in the fields through the barley and the wheat harvest. Until the barley harvest came first, and about the time that it was over, or soon after it was over, the beginning of the wheat harvest began. And so then there would be work and the work of working in the fields through the wheat harvest. And she gleaned in the fields during both of those times, gathering wheat, gathering barley, gathering grain for eating. Chapter number 2, we could call Gleaning in Boaz's Field. And so in chapter 2, we see that Ruth determines she's going to go work. She's going to help to provide for her mother-in-law. She wasn't on a vacation trip. She wasn't on a cruise. She wasn't going to see the land of Israel just because she wanted to take a nice little vacation. She had come to take care of her mother-in-law. And so she goes in the fields and begins to glean. She begins to work. And she goes into the field. All of you know the custom of gleaning. The word glean in the English just simply means to gather little by little. And when they were gleaning in the fields, they were taking the leftovers. They were taking, we might say, the scraps that are left. After the harvesters had gone through and harvested the grain, they with the poor of the land were allowed to come in and to take what was left. And, in fact, under the law, the Israelites were told not to harvest the field completely, but to not harvest the corners of the field and to leave it for the poor. And so God's people were told to leave some for the poor in the field, and they could go glean. Those who were really destitute, those who did really have needs, could go and they could glean. And we're told this was kind of a humbling thing. You can imagine if you didn't have a job, or you didn't have someone to take care of you, or whatever your situation was, that you either didn't have income, or you had very little income, or something had happened to your income, whatever the situation was, you were of the poorest of the land. And yet to give them something to do, to give them to help to work for it, instead of just giving them something, they could go and they could work and they could glean. But we're told that it was considered to be a lowly thing, and it was a humbling thing. But that didn't keep Ruth from doing it. Even though it was a humbling experience to admit that you were so poor that you needed to glean, that you didn't have any other source of income, they would go work in the fields, and they would go glean in the fields. And so she was not too proud to go and work. She was not too proud to do what she could do. And so she goes out to glean in the fields, and it turns out she goes out to glean in the fields of a man by the name of Boaz. And of course, you know the story. You know that Boaz was a near relative, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. And so she goes out and begins to work, and she works all morning. And I guess Boaz wasn't there the first thing in the morning, because Boaz comes out to do his work or to oversee the work. It says he is a man of wealth, and he comes out into the field, and he sees Ruth out there, and he doesn't recognize her. He doesn't know who she is, or he's not close enough yet to recognize her. But we assume he did not know who this person was, but we know later he had already heard about her. He knew who she was by reputation. And he asked the other workers, who is this young maiden? Who is this young woman that's out there? Here's a person I don't recognize. And they answered, this is the daughter-in-law to Naomi. They came back with Naomi. And of course, then he knew who she was because of the fact that as we go down on reading, we see that he had heard about what she was doing and how she was taking care of her mother-in-law. And so in verse 8, notice, and we'll read a little bit more. And when Boaz said to Ruth, and so Boaz approached Ruth, and the workers had told him that she was out here early in the morning. And Boaz said to Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Do not glean in another field, neither pass from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. He's telling her, don't go to someone else's field. I'll take care of you. We see the compassion of Boaz throughout this story. And so he says to don't go to another field, but just come to this field. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. He's saying, I told the young men not to bother you. I told the young men to stay away from you. You don't have to worry about my workers. And when you get thirsty, the young men have drawn water for the other workers. You just go get a drink of the same water that our workers are using. And she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found favor in thy sight that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a foreigner? And Boaz answered and said unto her, it has fully been shown me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people that thou knowest not hitherto. Jehovah recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of Jehovah the God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to take refuge. I put as my summary of this chapter, at least not really a summary of the chapter, but you'll see on the board the verse I like from this chapter, Jehovah, recompense thy work. I started to put, it was either that or the last phrase there in verse 12, under whose wings thou art come to take refuge. She had trusted in God. I think she's already a believer in God. She had already come to trust in God. Maybe from the stories and the things that she'd been told by Naomi and Elimelech and her husband before the death of the men. Whatever, she trusted and she came and she said that she was going to follow Naomi's God. And so Boaz says, she says, why are you showing favor to me? I'm a foreigner. Why are you saying these kind things to me? And he says, all that you have done has been told. All that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. And how you left your father and mother in the land of your nativity. We haven't talked about that, but you think about the sacrifice that she has made. We all love parents. We all love the land that we are from. And it's different to go to a foreign land. Believe me, it's different to go to a foreign land. And their customs are different. And it just doesn't seem like home. You're out of place. If our friends from Arkansas were here, I'd make a snide remark about just like moving to Arkansas or something. But they're not here, so I won't pick on them. But you're not at home anymore. And things are different. And all that is a part of the sacrifice that she's making. So he understands that. He's a man of understanding. And he says, you've left father and you left mother. You've left the land of your nativity. And you come to a people that you didn't know before. Jehovah recompense thy work. He is putting a blessing upon her for all that she has done. And she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me. Can you imagine how comforting it would be for her to hear those words from him? That you just stay here in this field. I'll take care of you. The implication is we'll take care of you. You've done good for your mother-in-law. We're going to do good for you. You stay here. The young man will stay away from you. You stay here with my maidens. You work and we'll make sure. What she didn't know was that he was also telling the workers, you leave a little extra. You even leave a little extra, more than you normally leave, to make sure she has enough. And so he was taking care of her. Well, we can't talk about every piece of the story, but she works that day, and she does. She eats with the workers, and she works in the afternoon, and she gets done with her work, and she goes home, and she reports to her mother-in-law, and of course, her mother-in-law is impressed with what she has done, and she's excited to hear, and undoubtedly, she was excited to see all the grain that she brought home, and how hard that she had worked. And she also, when she heard of whose field she was in, she also understood that this was a near relative and tells her, well, this man is a near relative. And so a plan is hatched in Naomi's head. Well, she works on. There's some weeks in here before chapter 3. There's some weeks through the barley harvest and undoubtedly some weeks in the wheat harvest. But as they come to the end of the harvest, Naomi begins to hatch a plan that had been in the back of her mind, if not the front of her mind. And she tells her daughter-in-law in verse 1 of chapter 3, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And when she says, shall I not seek rest for thee, she's not saying, I'm going to give you a certificate to go down to the spa and rest a little bit. You've been working so hard, and I want to buy you a nice weekend at the spa where you can relax and get a manicure and get a massage. That's not what she's talking about. She's talking about security. Shall I not seek security for you? You work so hard during the harvest. I don't want you to work like this the rest of your life. You've been so sweet to take care of me and to help me, but I don't want you to have to do this for the rest of our lives. I need to seek some security for you. And so she begins to tell her plan. And of course, it was according to the law. Under the law, there was this law, as we've already referred to, that you're familiar with already, that of the Redeemer, of the kinsman Redeemer. If a man died and he had no seed, he had no children, then his brother was to take his wife and raise up seed unto him in his name. That was important in Israel. It was important for several reasons, but it was important because of the land. It was because of the inheritance. The land was to stay in the tribes by tribe. It was not to be given to someone else. And it was passed down from one generation to the next generation to the next generation. And that land was to stay in that family and to stay in that tribe. And if someone died, then God made provision for their seed to be continued so that there would be a son or there would be a child in the case of a daughter if no one else. to inherit that land and keep that land. And keep that land in the family. And so that was all a part of God's plan. And so there was this custom then. There was a piece under the law that someone would raise up. Someone would take his brother's wife and raise up seed to her. And if he didn't have brothers, then it would be a near relative. And so Naomi says, this man's a near relative. And I have a plan. And so she tells Ruth, he's down working tonight. He's working, thrashing. Once they would bring in the grain, then they would have to thrash the grain to separate the good part of the grain from the chaff. And so there would be continual work going on. Even after everything was in from the field, it would take for a while for the work to complete and get completed and to store the grain for the wintertime or whatever was coming up. And so he was still working. The harvest maybe was over or near the end. But he would be working late into the evening. And we're also told that it was a custom, and still is in some of those parts of the world, that the owner would sleep at the place where the thrashing was going on. He would stay there to protect this valuable commodity that they were putting up. And so it was a custom of them to sleep on the site there, to sleep near where the grain was being thrashed. And so she says, he's down there and he's working, and you wait. You wash yourself and you put on some ointment and you put on a nice dress and clothing, and you go down there and you don't let yourself be known. But you, when he eats and when he drinks and when he's tired and he lays down and he goes to sleep at night, you watch where he's laying down. You kind of spy on him. And when you see where he's going to lie down, and then when he's good and asleep, you go and lay down at his feet. And when he discovers you, say, all that you will say, I will do. And so Ruth does as Naomi told her to do. Let's skip down and read a few verses here in verse 10, beginning of chapter 3. And so go back to verse 8. It came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He was startled. Here's a stranger laying at my feet. I guess you'd be startled too, wouldn't you? If you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a strange person laying in your bed. A lot of things that sound kind of funny about that. And so he says, who are you? Who art thou, verse 9? And she answered, I am Ruth, thy maiden. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy maiden, for thou art a near kinsman. And so she was making reference, talking about thou art a near kinsman, you're a near kinsman, making reference to this custom. In other words, she was offering herself, she was saying, you're a near kinsman, and you have a responsibility in this matter. My husband is dead, and you're a near kinsman, and we understand the law, and I'm suggesting to you that you have a right to take me as a wife. And he said, blessed art thou, O Jehovah, my daughter. Thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than in the beginning. Talking about all that she had done. He looks upon this as such a kind act on her part. And he says, why? For you did not go after young men, neither poor nor rich. Technically, as a Moabitess, she really didn't have any obligation to follow through with this old man. He was a lot older than she was. We think of this as a love story. It's often been portrayed as a love story. I'm not sure it's a love story. I'm not sure Ruth was in love with Boaz. Maybe she was. Maybe she was. Maybe he was in love with, I don't know. There's no indication to me of that. You read some of the commentaries, and some of the commentaries, I think, get carried away on this point. One of the commentaries that I was reading here in chapter 3 talked about Naomi clearly, he said, Naomi could already see the chemistry that was happening between the two of them. Well, I don't know if there's any chemistry between the two. I don't know about that. I mean, it makes a nice love story. It kind of makes a nice tale. And here's these two people, and he's single, and she's single, and she's a hard worker, and he appreciates that. I'm sure all that was true, that he did appreciate what she was doing for her mother-in-law, and that he fell in love with her, but he was so much older, he didn't think he could approach her, and now he has the opportunity, and she's fallen in love with this older man. Maybe that's all true, I don't know. It's just not very clear to me that that's really what's going on. It seems to me that what she is doing, in the case of Ruth, is she's got an obligation to her mother-in-law. She feels that obligation. She could have married younger men. As a Moabite, she had no obligation to give herself to this old man. She could have gone after younger men. She could have married someone her own age. But she was trying to do what was right. And she was trying to do what was right for her mother-in-law and take care of her mother-in-law. And so she approaches him and encourages him to fulfill the obligation that was there under the law. And so he says, this is a kindness that you have done. Not just to him, but also for the security of herself and her mother-in-law. She was doing something that would bring great security to her and her mother-in-law. And here he is, this old man. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou sayest. For all of the city, my people, doth know that thou art a worthy woman. You notice the reputation she had. You notice the reputation that she had. Already the people were saying, she's a worthy woman. She's come and she's worked and she's taken care. Look at all she's done for her mother-in-law. And now it is true that I am a near kinsman, but there is one nearer than me. Tarry this night. And so he tells her to stay. And before it gets too light, he sends her back home and he sends more grain with her. And he tells her that he will take care of this. And so that ends up the end of chapter 3. And so she goes back to her mother-in-law. And the next day we see that Boaz approaches the kinsman redeemer. And so he goes to the city gates. And the city gates is, of course, where business was conducted by the men of the city. And he goes there and he waits for the one who is a near relative than him to show up. And when he comes and he shows up, he calls the man over and says, sit down, sir. Come here. I believe the American Standard says, come over here, my friend, and sit down. And so the man comes over and sits down, and he gets 10 witnesses, 10 elders to witness what's going on here. And he says to the kinsman, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling a piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these people seated here and in the presence of the elders of the people. If you will redeem it, do so. If you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. And so he doesn't even mention Ruth to begin with. He just mentions the property. I'm not sure why he does that. But he says, here's this piece of property. And it belonged to Elimelech. And you're first in line to buy it. And in front of all these witnesses, I want a commitment. I want to know whether or not you want to buy it. If you buy it, fine. But if you're not going to buy it, let me know. I'll buy it. And the man says, I'll redeem it. Hey, no problem. I'll buy the land. Everybody can use more land, right? So I'll buy the land. And so then Boaz says, in the day that you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, you require the dead man's widow. And you will raise up children in the name of the dead man. Oh, and now wait a minute. You didn't say anything about a woman. I'm not sure why he hesitated here. He says, after hearing that, he says, I can't do it. I'll put my own property in danger here. I'll put my own possessions and own estate in danger. I forget the exact wording. But he says, I cannot do it. Maybe he didn't want the responsibility of wife and young children that might come along. Some have suggested that he had a wife and his wife might not have liked the idea of bringing another young wife into the situation. Maybe it had to do with the possession that some have suggested that the fact that if he bought, then all of this becomes his possession. And yet now that another child comes in, there's going to be an equal distribution of his death, and the inheritance that his other children would have got would be reduced because of these other children getting their part, if there's children or multiple children. I'm not sure why all he doesn't want to do that, but he doesn't want to do it. And so he says, I will pass. And so you know the story. You know the story. That here before the witnesses, the man takes off his sandal, which was the custom, and he agrees to let Boaz have the rights to the land and to the wife. And Boaz takes those rights, and he buys the land, and he takes Ruth to be his wife, and not too far along comes a child, and that child is named Obed. And so get your comments ready. If anybody has comments, I'm giving you a chance to write down your thoughts. And so, Tyler, if you will, see if anybody wants to throw in their two cents before we finish. Go ahead and stand up. Tyler, stand up. Walk around. If y'all have things you want to say or suggest, hand them to Tyler. I knew the preacher would have a comment or two. Anybody else? Come on, guys. Come on, Harold, where's your comments? You guys are a big disappointment to me. Come over here. I know my wife will have some. She's writing right now. And while she's doing that, while he's picking those up, the son was named Obed. And see if these names ring a bell. Obed was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of David. So here is Ruth, a Moabitess. Very quickly, turn over to Matthew chapter 1. Look at Matthew chapter 1. And at verse 9. And Salmon begat Boaz. And Salmon begat Boaz of who? Who was Boaz's mother?
Rahab.
Isn't that interesting? Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. Lost my place. And Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse. And Jesse begat David, the king. It's kind of interesting that here in the lineage of Jesus are two, not one, but two foreigners. Both Ruth and Rahab. And both connected here with this story. Well, someone writes, Ruth left father and mother and land of birth for the God of Ruth. We must sometimes leave father and mother and their beliefs for the truth of the gospel. Isn't that true? Great application. Ruth left father and mother. Ruth left her homeland. Ruth left all that was near and dear to us. As we said earlier, each of us love our homeland. Each of us love the place where we grew up, and family and father and mother. And yet, because of her faith in God and her trust in God and her obligation to her mother-in-law and her fulfillment of that, she left, and so we have to leave. Ruth's devotion and love for Naomi. Your people shall be my people, your God shall be my God. Ruth's commitment to comfort her desolate mother-in-law. Boaz favors Ruth because of what she had done for Naomi. Ruth follows Naomi's instructions about Boaz. Ruth, known as a woman of excellence. Very good. Kindness and thoughtfulness is never out of fashion. As Naomi was to Ruth, as Boaz was to Ruth, as Ruth was to Naomi. Amazing story of a foreigner who wound up in the genealogy of Christ due to her great faith and character. Thank you. All very good comments. When I think of, I was thinking, how do you summarize? Get your songbooks out. How do you summarize? Well, when I think of Boaz, I think of character. Character, godly character. You know, it's kind of interesting. Twice in the book of Judges, two or three times in the book of Judges, what did the writer say about the period of the Judges? You remember? Twice, at least twice in the book of Judges, the writer of Judges says, and each man did what, Ron?
What they thought was right in their own eyes.
Each man did what was right in their own eyes. A godless time. But out of this godless time comes who? Boaz. There were some righteous people during the time of the Judges. And so there, not everyone in Israel was wicked. Generally, it was a tough time, and things got worse and worse, and the writer of Judges is absolutely right, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes, and they went after the idols, and it was getting to be a mess. But there were some who were righteous. There were some who still loved God. And Boaz was a man of character, and you see it throughout the story. Secondly, when I think of Ruth, I think of the word love. Love. Love for her mother-in-law, and love not in the sense of just syrupy, sweet, emotional love, but love in the sense of giving oneself, of showing love. You talk about showing love. How that she followed her back to her home, and how she cared for her, and how she worked hard in the fields. That's not easy work. Back-breaking work, gleaning. Now that's love. And when I think of Naomi, I'm sorry. When I think of Naomi, I think of bitterness. And she said, call me Mara, because God has dealt bitterly with me. But there's a lesson there. And she had a right to be bitter. In a sense, we can't blame her for being bitter. She went away with her husband and her two sons, and she came home without her husband and two sons. And life had been hard on her. And sometimes life is hard on us. But what do we see at the end of the story? Can you imagine her joy? I don't think we can begin to imagine her joy when she held that baby. When Ruth gave birth to a son that would continue on the family's name. She didn't know she was going to end up in the genealogy of the Messiah. But still, here is a child. All that bitterness, all of that hard, all those hard times and everything. And yet now it's come around and God's blessed her. Sometimes even out of bitterness can come sweetness. If we do what is right and we stay the course, there can come good things. Well, we're going to sing a song of encouragement this evening. In case there are one who needs to make a statement of any kind. I don't see any here that may need to obey the gospel, but we want to make the opportunity available for those who may have something tonight that they want to confess, want prayers about. If that be the case, let that be known while we stand and while we sing.
Zion's call sweetly rings over.